in this riding, that old fear tactic, the old bogeyman that, oh my God, you know, you have to vote liberal to stop the conservatives. Let's grow up and realize that you vote for what you believe in.
I worked with a woman who coaches men who are becoming women.
Just because a person doesn't go around blabbing her entire biological history doesn't make her a liar.
I've just seen so many films where the damaged street kid, you don't really like him, and I really didn't want Toby to become that.
This is a big, beautiful world, and who would want there to be only one kind of flower?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. UK queer couples civilize their partnerships. Canada's Sven Robinson controversially returns to the campaign trail. And parent and child transcend transition during a Transamerica road trip. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out. I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 10th, 2005. Over 1,000 same-gender couples lined up across the UK this week to register their relationships under the new Civil Partnerships Act. Gay and lesbian union ceremonies will be held in England starting on December 21st, following the same 15-day cooling-off period as heterosexual marriage applicants. Civil partnerships are essentially marriages in all but name, but calling them civil partnerships was the only way for the Blair government to get the measure through Parliament. The new law establishes mutual financial responsibility and provides the same social security, tax, pension, immigration, and inheritance rights available to heterosexually married couples, as well as divorce. Couples in Scotland will be able to hold their ceremonies a day before England and Wales because of a bureaucratic loophole, and in Northern Ireland as early as December 19th. Among the first to register were Sir Elton John and his partner David Furnish, whose official proclamation was posted alongside those of other wedding and partnership announcements at a town hall west of London. Their ceremony will be conducted at Windsor's Guild Hall, where Prince Charles married Camilla Parker Bowles earlier this year. Pop star George Michael has also announced that he'll register his partnership with longtime love Kenny Goss and hold a ceremony early next year.
46-year-old Matthew Roche, terminally ill with cancer, was granted a special waiver to tie the knot with his 37-year-old partner of 7 years, Christopher Cramp, on the first day of registration, December 5th, because he was not expected to live long enough to survive the 15-day waiting period. For the record books, they became the first same-gender couple to legally unite in the UK. Roche died the next day. Asda, global retail giant Walmart's British subsidiary, has jumped on the bandwagon with a line of greeting cards and commitment rings. Wedding day wishes, Mrs. and Mrs. says a pink-toned card. A blue card adorned with two top hats reads, "Congratulations, Mr. and Mr." Asda's seemingly progressive approach is a far cry from its much more conservative U.S.-based parent company, but a pound is apparently a pound, pink or otherwise. Perhaps the most notable sign of change in Britain's social fabric was the inclusion of civil partnerships in the Births, Marriages, and Deaths column in the December 5th edition of the venerable London Times. The 221-year-old column, for the first time, included notices of upcoming ceremonies for three same-gender couples. Partnered with children lesbian Janet Paraskeva, chief executive of the Law Society of England and Wales, the solicitor's professional body, said that she would probably be entering a partnership with her longtime spouse next year. "We haven't decided when, but we are pretty likely to do it," she told the Times. "The children keep nagging us. I think they just want the party."
There's no party for queer couples in Latvia, however, as the nation's parliament moves toward adding an amendment to the constitution that explicitly bans same-gender marriage. The country's first gay pride parade took place in Riga this past June amid a massive police presence to protect the marchers from thousands of angry opponents. The amendment was proposed by the first party of Latvia soon after that June march. For the amendment to be added to the constitution, it must pass three readings in parliament. In the second reading on December 1st, 73 MPs voted to support the amendment, only three MPs voted against, 12 abstained, and two did not vote. As the names of the three MPs who opposed the measure were read out, all from the center-right New Era Party, cries of shame were heard in the hall. The situation is complicated by the fact that Latvia is now a member state of the European Union, and if it adds the marriage ban to its constitution, the country could find itself at odds with continent-wide regulations guaranteeing LGBT rights. Queer leaders across the continent have expressed their concern.
In U.S. couples news, a mid-level New York State appeals court this week reversed a lower court ruling that the state's domestic relations law is unconstitutional because it does not permit marriage between people of the same gender. The 4-1 majority decision argued that it's not up to judges to redefine the terms husband and wife and bride and groom, which are gender-specific parts of that law. Lambda Legal, which represents several lesbian and gay couples seeking marriage equality, to no one's surprise, announced that it would appeal the ruling. All parties to the case expect the issue to eventually be decided by the New York Court of Appeal, the state's highest court.
The Republican-dominated Wisconsin Senate, in a straight party-line vote of 19-14, voted this week to amend the state constitution to ban same-gender marriages and civil unions. Lawmakers expect it to easily pass the assembly and appear on the statewide ballot next November.
Supporters of a 2008 initiative to eliminate same-gender marriage in Massachusetts, the only U.S. state where they're legal, delivered petitions with over 147,000 certified signatures, more than twice the minimum required, to the Secretary of State this week. However, because the proposal would amend the state constitution, it must also be approved by at least 50 members of the 200-seat legislature in two successive sessions. A measure to ban same-gender marriages but create civil unions won initial approval but failed earlier this year in a second vote.
And compared to Massachusetts, where more than 3,000 gay and lesbian couples sought marriage licenses during the first 6 weeks after they became legal, Connecticut's marriage equality organization Love Makes a Family reported this week that less than 600 queer couples have signed up for the new civil unions there in the same initial 6-week period that began October 1st. The group said that the low numbers suggest that the state's gay and lesbian couples are holding out for marriage equality and that many are not pursuing what some have called the second-rate status of civil unions.
The U.S. Supreme Court took up a landmark case this week that could determine whether universities that accept government money must accommodate military recruiters, which is now required by federal legislation known as the Solomon Amendment. The government argued that if it provides financial support to a college, then it should be able to recruit the very students whose education it has supported. The U.S. government provides up to $35 billion per year to colleges and universities in the form of grants, research funds, and financial aid. A number of law schools, where much of the opposition to on-campus military recruiters has occurred, have said they would welcome them if the Pentagon dropped its policy against openly lesbi-gay personnel, the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy adopted by the Clinton administration more than a decade ago. The Solomon Amendment has been contested by a coalition of universities with policies banning on-campus recruiting by employers whose hiring practices are based on race, gender, or sexual orientation. Part of the cultural meaning of the case is bound up in questions about gay rights, said Cornell Law School professor Trevor Morrison, a former clerk for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Indirectly, it's about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. It will likely be several months before a ruling is announced.
The Ford Motor Company confirmed this week that ads for its Jaguar and Land Rover luxury brands are being dropped from all gay publications. The move follows meetings with the religious right American Family Association. According to a report in WardsAuto.com, a respected auto industry publication, Ford Motor Company's decision to cease advertising in gay publications for its Jaguar and Land Rover luxury brands is part of a truce between the automaker and the American Family Association to avert a threatened boycott by the right-wing Christian conservative group. In addition, Ford has agreed not to sponsor any future gay and lesbian events, but will continue to maintain its employee policies, such as same-sex partner benefits. Ford flatly denied that the decision was made under pressure from the AFA, which has consistently criticized the company for being too gay-friendly. Ford spokesperson Mike Moran said it was strictly business and that the company's cancellation of the ads is part of a plan to streamline the brand's marketing strategy. Ford has now come under fire from numerous gay and lesbian rights organizations. A rare coalition of 17 national LGBT groups issued a joint press release expressing their dismay over Ford's actions, and several other activist organizations issued their own statements. Many queer advocacy groups are calling for a meeting with Ford management to discuss the matter.
And finally, a religious LGBT supportive ad, banned by major U.S. TV networks as too controversial, has collected some prestigious industry honors. It recently won the Association of National Advertisers 2005 Multicultural Excellence Award, beating ads by both Microsoft and MasterCard for the honor, previously received an Addy Award for Best Single National Spot, and the Outstanding Advertising Award from the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. The 30-second spot, produced for the United Church of Christ, was intended to attract gays, lesbians, and minorities who felt alienated by other denominations. It features two intimidating guards standing outside a traditional-looking church and choosing which people are permitted to attend Sunday services. Written text follows the scene, reading, "Jesus didn't turn people away, neither do we." An announcer then underscores the message with, "No matter who you are or where you are in life's journey, you are welcome here." Amen to that.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending December 10th, 2005, written this week by John Beaupre, Lucia Chappell, and Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Greg Gordon. A desperate housewife becomes a father who becomes the mother of a bug becoming a man. Later in the program. Just over 18 months ago, pioneering openly gay MP Sven Robinson resigned from the Canadian Parliament after admitting he'd stolen an expensive ring from a jewelry auction. Robinson told reporters at the time that he'd been experiencing severe emotional distress and had just snapped. He says he's now on the road to more than recovery and has, at the request of some mental health groups, been speaking publicly on those issues. Robinson recently announced his return to political life as the new Democratic Party candidate in Vancouver Centre, the heart of Vancouver's queer community. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching talks with Robinson about his controversial comeback candidacy in the January 23rd federal election against an arguably popular LGBT ally.
How are you doing? Because people are worried that in the world of recovering from mental health issues and serious emotional distress, 18 months is not a long time. So are you sure you're okay? Are you sure you can handle what's probably going to be a really scrappy election?
Well, you know, it's funny because some people have said that they have serious doubts about my sanity in view of my decision to head back into public life and politics. But no, in fact, I'm doing great. It's been obviously a tough and difficult journey the last couple of years, but I'm feeling strong. I'm feeling healthy, and just really looking forward to being back in public life.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because of the stigma around mental illness, I hadn't recognized my own symptoms. Even though people around me, my partner Max and friends, people I worked with, certainly recognized that I was dealing with some significant issues, and or rather wasn't dealing with them. And it was only as a result of the incident with the ring and for the first time really seeing a therapist, a very compassionate and wise therapist who recognized the symptoms and then started looking at family history, things like that, I realized that this is something that that probably I've been living with for some time. It's called bipolar disorder, and I'm fortunate it's a relatively minor form. Bipolar can take many different forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend more on the manic side than the depressive side. And, you know, it can be very seductive. You can be flying high for a long time. But for me, for example, it was things like just not getting enough sleep, pushing myself way too hard, and ultimately risk-taking. And, you know, that this the irrational act of taking a ring, you know, in full glare of video cameras and everything else. I mean, it literally was totally irrational and bizarre. But that's, unfortunately, sometimes that's what it takes to force you to confront that reality. And that's what it took for me. And get into therapy, to obviously to deal with medication as well, which for many people living with mental illness is critically important, and then to recover and move on. And frankly, showing Canadians and showing people that that people living with mental illness are able to play an important and positive role in all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. So why did you choose to run in Vancouver Centre?
Vancouver Centre is an amazing riding. I actually lived in Centre for almost a decade, for almost 10 years in the 80s and early 90s when I was one of the five MPs for the city of Vancouver. My old riding, Burnaby Douglas, is represented, and I'm so proud and so pleased that it is represented by my former assistant, Bill Fixay, and another openly gay man.
Well, I think that it would be fair to say that the opinions of Hedy Fry in Vancouver Centre are mixed, and there are some people that feel that she is, that as heterosexuals go, she has been a strong ally of the community. She's certainly not a homophobe by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, and they also appreciate her presence in Parliament because she's one of the very few women of color in Parliament. And so how do you respond to people who are concerned about you going up against her as opposed to going up against somebody who is perhaps not as strong an advocate for our community and also, you know, forcing this sort of battle of representation where do we want an openly gay candidate or do we want to defeat one of the only women of color in Parliament?
Well, does Hedy personally have a good record? Absolutely, on those issues. But she's a member of a party, and I'm proud of the record of New Democrats. Take same-sex marriage. About a quarter, over a quarter of her colleagues in her party voted with Stephen Harper against same-sex marriage. In the Justice Committee, when I brought my bill forward, and you remember the battle I had over my bill on to include sexual orientation and hate propaganda,
mm-hmm.
Liberals tried to kill that bill. They literally brought in there what I called the God Squad at the time, and it was Liberals, the Liberal Minister of Justice and Liberal members of the Justice Committee, that tried to kill that bill. I just don't buy this argument that, well, she's been good on gay rights. Sure, but what about health care? What about housing? What about homelessness? What about all the other issues that the people of Vancouver Centre care about desperately? What about the environment? I think we have to look at the track record, and I think that's what's going to be decisive in this election.
Are you worried that you and Hedy could split the progressive vote and a conservative could end up representing Vancouver Centre?
Oh, no, that's an absolutely impossible scenario. The fact of the matter is that this race is a two-way race. In the last election, look at the numbers. In the last election, the conservatives were right out of it. Their candidate this time is somebody that nobody's ever heard of. A decent fellow, but no, this is a battle between New Democrats and Liberals, and I think a lot of progressive people, Liberals that maybe in the past have voted Liberal, who are so disgusted with their own party and its involvement in this corruption and scandal, and feel that it's time that we need a stronger representation of New Democrats. I mean, Jack Layton's been doing a terrific job. So it's not in this riding, that old fear tactic, the old bogeyman that, oh my God, you know, you have to vote Liberal to stop the Conservatives. For God's sake, you know, let's grow up and realize that you vote for what you believe in.
That was Canada's Sven Robinson in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching.
From a legendary disco diva,
how do I look? How do I feel? You feel
to a purveyor of country noir.
I love life and life itself. Could you some mercy now?
A variety of queer musicians painted a rich mosaic of our life and times on audiophile this year. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle. Join me and Chris Wilson as we survey our favorites on the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review, coming the last week of December here on This Way Out.
You can be anybody that you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. And know I will love you still.
Parent and child get to know each other in Transamerica, a new road trip movie that covers a lot more than geography. Our Steve Pride chats with the principals and has preview clips.
Medical procedures to date.
The usual electrolysis, 3 years of hormone therapy, and a facial feminization surgery. After my operation, I will be a woman.
In the new movie Transamerica, days before her final surgery, pre-operative transsexual Bree is contacted from jail by a long-lost son, the product of her lone sexual encounter with a woman. When her therapist demands she resolve any feelings toward parenthood prior to her pending surgery, Bree travels to New York City to bail out the teenage Toby.
Me, Toby Wilkins.
Jesus the Reformer?
That's one of these churches that sends missionaries out.
No, I'm from the Church of the Potential Father.
Toby is a male hustler with a coke problem, and not as easy to shake as Bree had planned. Together, they begin a drive Transamerica, in which they discover things about each other and about themselves.
Just because a person doesn't go around blabbing her entire biological history doesn't make her a liar.
As you've undoubtedly heard by now, Felicity Huffman is amazing as Bree. There are not a lot of positive portrayals of transsexuals on film, so Huffman was determined to get it right.
I worked with a woman who coaches men who are becoming women. I watched her coaching a transgendered woman, first of all, and then she coached me. So she did her regular style of teaching, and how I learned was as if I didn't know anything. So when she said, look, when women speak, they use their hands a lot. Men don't. When women speak, they give long and verbose answers, which I am example of right now. And men usually, you know, go, yes, no. Well, it was hard. Women nod. Women go along in the conversation. They bring you along. Men don't. So I learned it as if I didn't know anything. It was the second day of shooting in New York City. I was in full regalia. And what I had decided to do undergarment-wise, which is not for every transgendered person, but just where I thought Brie was at that time, was really tight underwear, support hose, and then a girdle, the kind your mom used to wear, you know, from your knees up to here. And I still realized that something was missing. So I had someone go to like the Pink Pussycat or the Treasure Chest or something like that. And they said, yes, they do have them, just like women, you know, add things to their bras. I guess this is for men and their bathing suits. So they said, you want small, medium, or large? And I said, small or medium? I can't remember. Of course, it's guys. So it was probably like large, jumbo, and super big. And I dubbed him Andy for some bizarre reason. And Andy lived with me the whole shoot.
Bree is smart, conservative, and always on edge. Terrified of being clocked as transsexual.
Bree is deep stealth. In other words, her main objective throughout the day is just to come in under the radar. She doesn't want to be noticed. She doesn't want anyone to think she's pretty or not pretty or tall or short. She just wants to be invisible and live in her body as a woman. And Andrea James and Calpurnia Adams, their company is called Deep Stealth, because that's how a majority of transgendered women have wanted to live. You know, they don't want to be known as, oh, you're the person that used to be a guy. They want to be known as a woman. So how do you do that then, keeping your original gender secret? Andrea and Calpurnia and many other women said that their real fear is small children, just like in the movie.
Are you a boy or a girl?
And the voice. I mean, also their height, the size of their hands, everything's in so they don't see the length and the breadth of their arms. They keep their hands like this. But you go to the store and you look like Kate Moss and you go, can I have some bread? And you sound like James Earl Jones and you're clocked. They are women. They were born as women with the wrong gender. They want to be seen as women, not as a freak.
Kevin Zegers, who plays Bree's son, Toby, is no newcomer. The handsome 21-year-old actor starred in his first feature film at age 9. But Transamerica is a departure. It's a role he fought for, and he gives a performance that touches the heart.
I've just seen so many films where the damaged street kid is, you don't really like him, and I really didn't want Toby to become that. He just becomes boring, and you don't like him if he seems too far gone. I think that Toby needed to be somebody who was savable. I think he needed to be somebody who was lovable and somebody who you could see get kicked in the face and has had this crappy hand of cards dealt to him, but still kind of comes up with a smile on his face. And the whole progression of him is that he becomes more able to just say, you know, this is the way that it is. And the fact that it's not what he had dreamed of for a father is kind of secondary to the fact that he found somebody that he loves and who wants to take care of him. And he had very simple goals. And usually when you go in as a character, and I do my work before, there's so many different things that a character wants. But this was quite simple for me, because I think all he really wanted was somebody to take care of him, somebody to love him. And I think that the reason he's so sexual in the film, and the reason he uses his sexuality, is not because he gets off on it as much as he gets off on the idea of somebody appreciating and loving him and liking him, and that's the only way he's ever gotten attention. So,
out gay director Duncan Tucker says he hopes the audience takes away at least one lesson from Transamerica.
Gender is not necessarily the same thing as anatomy. And if you lose the concept of gender being equivalent to anatomy, Brie decided in her life that she was going to go for the anatomical change. But if you let that go for now, you know, there's like macho men and there's macho women, and there's effeminate men and there's effeminate women, and gender cues are all over the spectrum, all over the rainbow. And it's just made me aware of that. And who cares? This is a big, beautiful world, and who would want there to be only one kind of flower?
And why this particular story, this particular topic, for his first feature?
I know what it's like to feel like a misfit. I had a hard time in school when I was a kid, and in high school, I didn't know how to fit in very well. I was a little bit like Brie, I suppose. I was a fairly smart kid, but my emotional IQ wasn't very high, and I wasn't really good socially. And ever since, my heart and soul just go out for anybody who feels like they don't belong. And in a way, a transsexual man or woman is one of the ultimate misfits in our society now. It's so strange because, obviously, as it's referred to in the movie very briefly, in other cultures at other times, these people had a place.
This has been a conversation with Felicity Huffman, Kevin Zegers, and Duncan Taylor. The company that Felicity mentioned helped prepare her for the role is called Deep Stealth Productions, and can be found online at deepstealth.com. Transamerica is a Weinstein Company release. For more information on this or other LGBT films, drop by prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Lucia Chappell, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to John Aravosis. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, and to discover some unique holiday gift-giving ideas and a U.S. tax deduction, too. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KMUD&E, Garberville and Eureka, California, CJSR, Edmonton, Alberta, WORT, Madison, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.